Smart, sexy, kinky, fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. My guest today is adult industry veteran Ernest Green. Let me tell you how I met Ernest Green. It was at an orgy, actually, and there were a lot of adult industry people there. And this was way back in the 90s, before I really knew anyone. And I was laying on a bed, and next to me, Ernest Green was laying on that same bed, but he was sort of next to me doing something with someone, and I was doing something with someone else. And I sort of looked over at him and thought, you seem interesting. We should know each other. And I think we exchanged some pleasantries. He can tell you if he remembers this differently. Exchanged some pleasantries, and that was that. Well, fast forward, I am trying to shop around my very first movie, The Ultimate Guide to Anal Sex for Women, and John Stagliano from Evil Angel says he might be interested in doing it, but I need a kind of a guardian, you know, someone who'll show me the ropes and who knows what he's doing and will be a co-director and you know, keep me in line or whatever. And I decide that's going to be Ernest Green, who I know from fetish films, and I know we have sort of the same sensibility. And I met him at this orgy, and he seemed really nice. So I flew out with my Boston Terrier at the time, Jordan, and a little luggage. And Ernest not only was going to co-direct my movie, he was going to let me stay at his house for a month while we were shooting this film. Now, what he didn't tell me is that his guest room in his Hollywood apartment is also a working dungeon. So I would be sleeping on a bondage bed. And the very first night, I fell asleep on the bondage bed, which is more comfortable than it actually sounds. It's actually quite comfortable. It's well padded. I sort of stumbled, you know, in a haze into the bathroom that was right off of the guest room / dungeon. And I shut the door and I sat on the toilet to pee and I sort of opened my eyes. And there on the back of the door was the largest selection of enema equipment I had in the 90s ever laid eyes on. And next to all this enema equipment was a rubber apron, a black latex apron. I knew I had found, well, a friend for life, Ernest Green. So he mentored me. He became a friend. We're still friends after all these years, which is crazy. And that's how I met Ernest Green. Let me tell you about him. Ernest Green has worked in nearly all facets of the media. Since 1985, he has concentrated his efforts mainly in adult entertainment, serving as executive editor of the best-selling adult magazine Hustler's Taboo since 1999, and most recently as chief associate editor for Hustler's All Sex Issues. He has been a performer, writer, director, and producer in the adult industry. His body of work comprises over 500 titles, including AVN Award winners Strictly for Pleasure, Mask of Innocence, Jenna Loves Pain, and oh, look at that, Tristan Taramino's Ultimate Guide to Anal Sex for Women. I guess I finally did get a good night's sleep. With his wife, Nina Hartley, he has served as producer and director of the Nina Hartley Guide series of adult sex education programs for Adam and Eve. He's done a lot more, and you're going to hear about that in this hour. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Ernest.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be here, as always.
Now, do you want to tell your side of that story, or is that all measure up with what you experienced? I want to hear from you meeting me.
That's pretty much the way I remember it. I remember there was some comparing of tattoo ink and some agreement that we had the same standards for that. And that's an aesthetic, you know, beginning. And then we did have some discussions with John, and we agreed that on a general plan for doing this. You had some very strong ideas about it, and I think they proved themselves in the picture, which came out to be a terrific picture that won lots of awards and sold lots of copies and educated a lot of people, which is about as much as you can ask. I think all in all, it was a terrific collaboration. And since that time, you've been a regular contributor to the magazine that I edit.
Yes.
Yes.
You've been the anal advisor. I'm the one and only.
You're the one and only.
I began as the anal advisor, and that's no right. one has taken the baton. I will not give it up.
You should not. We do not intend to let you give it up. We have no such plans. No, that's our most popular running feature. And you have done a wonderful job of answering some of the strangest questions that we receive at Taboo. And that is really quite a high bar to clear.
That's true.
Because we get some strange ones. And you and I have continued in our video careers. I do have a new picture out. I'm here to plug my new picture.
We're going to get to that.
All right.
Well, we got to dial back the clock. Okay.
All right.
So you've always worked in some form of media. I was so excited to learn that your first publication was in Esquire at the age of 15.
Yeah, it's been downhill from there. I don't know what the hell happened.
No.
So
you've been a newspaper columnist, a reporter, a radio show host, a magazine editor, a screenwriter. How did you find your way into the adult industry?
It was a mysterious thing because most people sort of end up here by default. Because they, think, well, it looks easy, pick up a few bucks, could be fun. I don't know. I never had that feeling about it. I had an agenda about it from the beginning. I watched porn when it was first available on VHS. I bought one of those giant VHS machines, the size of a piano. It cost about $750 so I could watch porn. And when I first saw it, there were two things that entered my mind. And this was back in the so-called golden age of porn, or rather toward the end of it in any case. The first thing I thought was, there's got to be a better way to make this stuff. And the second thing I thought was, so who are these people and why don't I know them? And actually, at that time, I was already writing screenplays for mainstream pictures and having what I would describe as the typical development writer experience, which was that I wrote 22 feature screenplays and had 7 full-paid development deals and 1 produced feature, which was about the normal average in those days. It didn't look like it was taking off, but that really was not the motivation. I really got involved with porn because I wanted to make porn. My subject matter, everybody has a subject, as someone in Nina's family once asked her, why sex? Why not the violin? I have no answer to that question either. I was drawn to this material. I wanted to do this material. There was no way to do it in mainstream. I had an excellent mainstream agent who once at an open story meeting tried to pitch me to a producer as his best writer. And the producer got all excited and said, well, so what's the subject? And he says, mainly sex. And the producer said, so who's your second best writer? So that's basically the mainstream attitude toward this particular subject matter. And I figured if I was ever going to do it, I was going to have to do it in the medium where it could be done. And the thing that I discovered that I liked about porn was that it was a sort of DIY thing. There wasn't enough money to hire a bunch of people to make the process impossible to do. You just sat down more or less with the guy whose money you were going to be spending. And you told him what you wanted to do, and he thought about it for 15 seconds, and he said, nah, not interested in that, and told you to get out, or sent you down to accounting to pick up a check, and you did everything. It was a total DIY deal. You hired everybody. You were not just the director. You were the screenwriter. You were the producer. You were the casting director. You did everything. You moved props around. You gave people rides. And the result of this was that, in anywhere from 1 to 5 days, you came away with, not just one picture, but a hardcore version, a softcore version, and several other things that went with it. And over a period of time, I did get to make some pictures that I felt expressed ideas that I had about sex. The problem is, I came in here, like you, with ideas about sex. Most of the people who work in porn have no ideas about sex. They have no idea about sex, and they have no ideas about sex.
Right. And thus the repetition and just the sort of same, reinventing the same thing over and over and over again, which you definitely obviously don't do. And your love, if one could look at your career, is really kink and BDSM.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, I'm thinking about when you might have first discovered these desires, and it certainly wasn't when, you know, there was a Munch in every city and FetLife. So when you first realized you were kinky, where did you go and what did you think?
Well, of course, there was never a time when I wasn't. I should say that I'm one of those people for whom it's an orientational thing. I just always knew that this was, that sex for me was about this. It was about BDSM. It was about power exchange. It was about domination and submission. This was what it was about. So it was simply a matter of finding some other like-minded individuals. They had to be out there. It's one of those kinds of things. Is there other life in the universe? The universe is very big. It's probably so. Well, there are a lot of people out there, and some of them have to be kinky. When I got out here to California, there was one organization that sort of acted as the community's nexus and gathering place, mostly for new people to meet one another. It was a kind of a weird alliance of gay leather men and submissive transvestites and kinky swingers, and all of them would fit in one room. When I first joined this organization, there were 67 members, and I think it was number 68. And by the time I left, which was after six terms as coordinator there, a period of about 10 years altogether, it had about 700 members, which was approaching some kind of critical mass. SM had become kind of trendy. It was starting to show up in music videos and in fashion and stuff like that. And there were starting to be nightclubs that had SM themes, and younger people started coming into the thing. And pretty soon it just got to be huge. And now every city with over 100,000 people has at least one kinky nightclub, you know, someplace or some event where people go to meet other people who they think are like them. But as somebody who's observed this entire thing from where it started to where it is now, I don't really think that a lot of the foundational beliefs of those who were active in it early on really have any relevance to what's out there now. I mean, I think there's a whole new kind of world that identifies as kinky. It's principally generated on the internet. It's mostly people who met each other online and live most of their lives online and have most of their BDSM experience online, have never seen each other. And I hope in a lot of their cases they never do. It'll be best for everyone if they don't. But it has created this, you know, tremendous surge of interest that I don't think is necessarily accompanied by much good sense or experience. It used to be that in order to get into the community, you sort of had to be vetted by the people who were already there. You know, you had to get into an organization, you had to go to an orientation where you were subjected to a kind of, you know, ear banging by the older members about how, you know, this isn't, we are safe, sane, consensual, legal players. This is the way everything must work. Everything must be negotiated. Everything must be 100% by consent of everybody involved, or else we'll kick your ass out. Well, there's no way of kicking anyone out of the scene anymore, because it would require kicking them off of at least this continent, possibly several others, because it's gotten to be that big a thing. So there really are no agreed organizing principles, and there really are no agreed authorities in a position to say, no, just because there's something resembling consent, or at least the absence of no, that makes any kind of conduct all right. We never argued that that was true in the old days. We always said that there were responsible ways to do this and non-responsible ways to do this, and that the standard for all of this wasn't simply, you know, legal age. It had to be a little more than that. Well, I think we've lost a lot of that, and I think some of the results of that loss are evident if you spend very much time on the busier social networking websites where kinky people try to get together, where mainly what they do is argue about what it is that they really are all about.
Yeah, I think I know what site you're talking about, but we've got to take a break.
Okay.
And hear from our fabulous sponsors. So, more about kink and porn and the life of Ernest Green when we return on Sex Out Loud.
The internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans, just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Looking to add something fun and different to your sexual experiences? Then try AstroGlide X, premium silicone personal lubricant. AstroGlide X contains a unique blend of high-quality silicones that provide a silky smooth experience unlike any other. AstroGlide X is also waterproof and perfect for water play. Not only does AstroGlide X last longer than all water-based products and is hypoallergenic and latex-safe, it's even great for massage. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. My guest today is adult editor, producer, director, writer, Ernest Green. First, I want to say special thanks to my amazing sponsor, The Smitten Kitten. The Smitten Kitten is a progressive sex toy store for everybody. So that means it's for you. Go to smittenkittenonline.com, use coupon code Tristan for 20% off your order. So before the break, we were talking about kink, the downfall of kink, perhaps. But
perhaps.
But you motor on. In fact, you've done this trilogy of films for Adam and Eve. It began with O, The Power of Submission, then The Surrender of O, and the newest edition is The Truth About O. These movies have sold something like 100,000 copies, which in this day and age, when no one is paying for porn, is like a gigantic number. They're put out by Adam and Eve. What drew you to making a kind of a retelling of the story of O?
Well, first of all, let me say that when I first got into this business, I was hoping that it would. One thing it did do was to enable me to live an out life as a kinky person and not lose my job. But what I was hoping was that it would be a good vehicle for communicating ideas about BDSM sexuality that were positive in nature. But I found that the people who particularly specialized in making videos about BDSM related topics were amazingly sex negative in nature. And I fought that battle for a very long time. I started out at the very bottom of the ladder there as a rigger. In fact, it was a bondage rigger. My first job in porn was tying up Marilyn Chambers for her last movie before her first retirement, which gives you an idea how long I've been at this. And for a long time, I really just worked on other people's bondage movies, tying up performers who appeared to have no sexual motivation for anything they were doing. They would just grab each other off the street. It was all women. Men weren't even allowed in them in those days. And they would just grab each other for no apparent reason and tie each other up and beat on each other and yell at each other. And then everybody would go home, which was not how I envisioned SM. But over on the mainstream side of porn, there was a widespread belief that if you mixed hardcore sexually explicit material with bondage, you would be arrested and thrown in jail forever. Because some one producer tried it at one time and got busted for it. And so it then became a matter of accepted wisdom, if you will.
I think some of the Dworkin McKinnon language was about bondage explicitly.
Yeah.
And in Canada, still, I think can't do
in
bondage
Canada,
and sex.
Yeah, but there's never been a law.
Or a case, even.
There have been some cases. But there has never been an actual law that made it illegal, made it on the face of it, obscene to make a picture that showed bondage with penetration. No, there is no such law. I love it when people tell me, you know, producers tell me that's against the law. No, it's not. There is no such law. And I really looked. So for a long time, what I did was eventually I got into a position to direct those sorts of silly little bondage pictures. And I started sneaking more and more actual sex into them. It was convenient because they were mostly all female cast, so they didn't have to be visible penetration for things to still get sexual. Basically, the principle upon which these pictures was made was that we would get attractive performers and that we would strip them naked, tie them down, and get them off. And that formula worked very well for quite a long time. Eventually, Taboo came along. Larry Flint, as usual, was willing to defy convention and let us publish a magazine where we showed bondage with penetration. That helped move the barrier a little further out there. And then eventually I persuaded, of all people, the most conservative of big production companies to let me make big features with big name players that had bondage with visible penetration, that were sex movies with bondage in them.
And you're talking about Adam and Eve.
About Adam and
Eve.
One
of the most well-respected and almost squeaky clean companies in that all of their films, including your trilogy,
that's right,
are vetted and approved by a council, a group of therapists who deem them to be healthy depictions of sexuality.
Absolutely. And in some ways, it was so appropriate that Adam and Eve would be the perfect company to do this with, because that's it was like why only Nixon could go to China. No company could be so squeaky clean,
yes,
that they could afford to defy this longstanding convention. And we did, in this more and more in each picture. In the current picture, in Truth About O, everybody is tied up. There is no, not everybody, but in every scene there's bondage. In every scene there's BDSM activity. It's the most realistic of the three. Most of the people who are the cast of this particular picture have a lot of personal BDSM experience and a lot of professional BDSM experience. And this really, the third picture is by far the most insider of the three of them. But they all are based on, they're basically fanfic based on some characters who resemble the characters in that ancient novel, The 50 Shades of Grey of its day, Story of O, which was my first literary exposure to BDSM culture. And I had the same reaction to that I had to the new one. After I finished reading it, I threw the book across the room. Because yeah, even though I didn't know anything from personal experience about BDSM, I knew that there was something really wrong with this treatment of it. And since that time, I've been trying to sort of fix that story. And with these three pictures, it took me three movies to do it, and they're 3 hours long each. So with 9 hours of running time, I think I've managed to correct a lot of the misconceptions generated by this little 200-page book that was written, you know, 50 years ago.
Now, the star of this one is Bobby Starr.
Yes.
Who is, I know from experience that she is kinky in real life.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had her on the show before, and she's
great.
Talked about her work at kink.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she also has a kind of a depth. I mean, she's quite smart.
Very.
So I'm wondering what she brought to the project that was different for you, because you've had a different O each time.
And they each had their virtues. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say any of them did a better or worse job. They all did a different job. They interpreted the characters in a different way. Carmen Luvana was the first one, and she captured the fierce and conflicted side of that character very well. In fact, I thought her acting was very good in it, and I thought she looked great in the part. But her approach to the sex, you know, once she got going, was pretty much not very submissive, let's put it that way. And then next we had Brie Olson, who's just incredibly fabulously sexy. She's the Marilyn Monroe of porn, and she was into it but didn't have a lot of personal experience with it, so she kind of had to learn on the job. But she gave it a lot of, she brought a lot of what I would call visceral energy to that part. I mean, it was terrific to watch her enjoy it, and everybody else sort of got that mood from her. But what Bobby brought to it was a sophisticated understanding of what it is we were really doing and why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are, in the 3 hours of running time of this movie, about 27 minutes of dialogue. And she has almost all of it.
Right.
And she manages to pretty well explain the whole thing, so that doesn't even seem like she's explaining it. You know, she just inhabits that character so effortlessly. It was interestingly enough, of all of these pictures, it was the easiest one to make, because the people who were working on it, with Bobby at the head of the cast, so understood what it was they were supposed to be doing. I really just kind of had to sit there at the monitor and watch them do it. Mm. You know, they took very, very little directing. These were people who did this in their own lives. They had done it on the web. They had done it in other videos, and they did not need me to tell them everything from starting from, you know, don't lose the key onward. So really, this, I think this picture in many ways is the, you know, it's the culmination of the trilogy, and it was the most fun to make. And I give Bobby absolutely the highest, I started to say marks. Now, come on. I didn't mean it
the
that
highest
way.
Marks.
Yeah, God. I would say that I have nothing but the best things to say about what she did with this part. She just, she brought to it a certain, as one critic put it, a certain brunettitude that was exactly right for it. You know, I absolutely believed her as that character, and I think everybody else did too. It was really a lot of fun. Nina was in all three of the pictures. She's the one character who recurs in all three of the pictures is Marie. And just the two of them talking in this one is probably about as close to realistic dialogue among genuinely kinky people as you're likely to run into in a mainstream porn feature. That's for sure.
Now, you brought up 50 Shades of Grey. We've talked about 50 Shades of Grey on the show in various contexts.
Yep.
It really has been a runaway bestseller, and I'm all for people making money, really.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But it has now become kind of the dominant narrative of kink, and as a kinky person, I feel like it doesn't represent the kink world that I know. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I think it repeats a whole bunch of really stupid cliches that I would expect to see from people who did their research on, you know, on the internet and reading some other people's books and had absolutely no clue and no personal experience of it, because basically it repeats the tired old memes of, you know, abused people grow up to have commitment issues that cause them to create SM as a barrier between, you know, themselves, their real personalities and any kind of real intimacy. It's so badly written. It really should be called 50 Shades of Purple, in my opinion, but that's just my opinion. Actually, that isn't just my opinion. It's taken a real drubbing from the critics, but that hasn't stopped it from making $1 million a week, which is really kind of extraordinary. I mean, is it for a rather obscure book about a rather strange topic that's not very well written and has no likable characters, it seems to have caught the public's imagination in the most extraordinary way, which suggests to me that the hunger for any kind of knowledge or contact with this particular experience is so strong that they will accept even this as worth their time. This is three long books you have to get through if you really want to read all of it. And, you know, I could actually only make it through the first one. I think I really figured out about as much as I was going to at that point. I mean, I don't like to bash other people's work. I'm sure for a lot of people, it's very exciting and fun. It's a good example of a certain kind of fairly tepid mainstream attempt at erotica that's, you know, it's a big market, it's a big industry unto itself. But I do find that the cliches about the personalities involved, I find them offensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really are. If you were to make a movie about interracial sex, or write a book about interracial sex for a big mainstream audience, and you portrayed sex between people of different races in the way that BDSM sex is portrayed in these books, you would be looking for some place to hide under another. You'd be in witness protection now. You know, there would be so many organizations out there denouncing you for having defamed all of them for you know, perpetrating this thing. I mean, this is, at one level, it's the birth of a nation of BDSM porn. You know, I've got to say, it's in its way, it's a real powerhouse mediocrity. It's tremendously attractive to a large number of readers, but its ideas are completely toxic on this subject. So if you want to read it and have a good time, fine, but please do not believe that people who are actually serious about living kinky lives in any way resemble any of those. They should just put a disclaimer at the beginning saying any resemblance between this book and anybody living or dead is purely coincidental.
Okay, strong words from Ernest Green. We've got to take another break, hear from our sponsors, including something less controversial, Astroglide. Astroglide personal lubricants make sex better. Go to astroglide.com to get a free sample and find out more. More after the break with Ernest Green.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans, just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. My guest today is Ernest Green, a veteran of the adult industry, known for his epic BDSM features, including the new one, which is part of a trilogy, which is based on a sort of reimagining of the story of O. This one is called The Truth About O. It stars Bobby Starr, Nina Hartley. Speaking of Nina Hartley, you're married to her.
I certainly am.
And
very happy we just had our ninth anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
She's really one of the most well-known and best-loved performers in the industry. And I'm wondering what it's like to direct your wife. Is that weird for you? Is it weird for you to see her have sex with other people? Give me some insight into how that is as a dynamic in your marriage.
Well, first of all, one of the reasons we got married is because we're both non-monogamous. I mean, really, we're not just like, ours is not one of those things that's an open marriage for as long as everybody's in the mood and everyone agrees on everything. No, it's really that way. I mean, we really have, we have sex with other people together and separately. We have some people in common and some people that the other one just isn't interested in at all. And that was a factor in our decision to get married. We decided that who else in the world was ever going to be able to make a marriage work, you know, with these caveats, except the two of us. And we hit it off as friends first. We met working on a picture. She was performing in it, and I was at that point an assistant director, and she was stuck with a really lousy scene, a really badly written scene. And I was able to, you know, help her sort of tune it up a little bit and make it more Nina-like, because I knew a little bit about her and about what her message was. I appreciated the fact that she had come into this industry with an agenda as well. She is a committed sexual liberationist, and she saw this as a vehicle for that, in the same way I saw it as a vehicle for my ideas about kink sex. So, we both had a sort of sense of mission about what we were going to do here, and she really liked the fact that I took it seriously, that she took it seriously. So we became friends in that way, and over a period of time, the friendship developed into a sexual relationship, and then developed into a very close relationship, and eventually it turned into marriage. But nothing has fundamentally changed about what it is that we like about each other. We like each other as people. We find each other stimulating, fun company. We like to share the same kind of sex life. We like to have the same kinds of adventures. We really have all the conventional features that you'd want in a successful marriage, and we have a couple of unconventional features. I never find it Anything other than interesting to watch her perform, it certainly doesn't disturb me. I have no problem directing her as if she needs directing. She does not need much directing. She just needs to understand what it is that I want from a scene, and then she goes out there and gets it. It's really a very easy job for me. We also understand that there's a difference between sex that you have with a fellow performer and sex that you have with somebody with whom you have some other kind of intimate connection. This is a job, and we do it as a job. And we do it together on the set, working as colleagues. When she's not out there performing, she works as my assistant director, and you know, she helps me through with the scripts and so on, and working with the performers and coaching people on their lines. So really, it's a kind of a mom and pop business for us.
Now, I don't know if this is a touchy subject, but something I know about you because we're friends is that you have a really active sex life. And you are over 55. Can
I'm
I say that?
60.
Okay, great. I turned
60 in June.
Okay, great. Let's put it out there.
It's a fact.
And I'm wondering if you attribute that not only to this great partnership, but to being kinky. I'm wondering if you have had this sort of long, robust sex life for all these years, if you think it's because you're kinky.
That's because you never met my mother. That's... That's why you ask that question. I remember her saying to me when she was about 70, you know, the problem is there's no great passion in my life. I said, you know, at your age, you might have a great passion for your favorite chair or something like that. And she gave me a sort of a look I knew well. But actually, there's a long history of that. After my mother passed on, my dad found himself somebody new, and he spent the last 15 years of his life with another partner. And they were active well into his 80s. So that might be part of it. I think
DNA.
It might be some DNA happening there. And I also think that, the thing about kink is it provides you with a lot of variety in things you might do for fun that keeps it sort of lively and keeps you interested in it. And it doesn't all depend on being able to do exactly the same thing over and over and over again the same way and staying interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bigger menu from which to choose. And I think that helps. That helps keep it interesting. And I also think that multiple partners helps to keep it interesting. Yes, both Nina and I have active sex lives. That is a fact. And I'm glad to say even that you know, it's more understandable. She's a little younger than I am, but in any case, more understandable that she would. But I'm happy to say that another nice thing about kinky people is that they often will look beyond things like age and look at what you may know, what tricks you may have picked up in your experience, and in what ways age might play in your favor. Certainly playing the dominant role, which I do, there's some association between age and authority. It's probably unwarranted and generally a bad idea, but there it is.
Fetishize it. Go for it.
Yeah. So I think there are some partners I have who fetishize my age, and I certainly wouldn't deny them that. But on the other hand, don't call me daddy, please. But on the other hand, I understand how the age disparity in some cases might work. But you know what? As kink becomes more popular, I'm meeting more age-appropriate partners these days who are deeply, deeply involved in the world of kink, and they're a lot of fun. There are a lot of people in my age group who are active in the world of kink at this point. It's not as if I can never find anybody to hang out with who's over 30. In fact, it's gotten to the point now where there's a big division between the over 30s and the under 30s in the world of kink. You know,
and what do you think that's about?
I think it's a bunch of I'm
the
I,
division.
Am I able to use a certain word? Am I able to
yes.
use yes?
You can I say whatever you want.
The word that I'm looking for here is bullshit. I was having that word searching thing you get at my age. I do think that's bullshit. I understand that younger players don't like the idea of being perved on by weird old dudes. I totally get that. I totally get that you'd rather party with a lot of other young, hot, good-looking people. But if none of you know what you're doing and you have no experience at SM whatsoever, not only are you likely to have a somewhat disappointing experience at best, because there is some technical know-how to make this work and some understanding of the mojo of the thing that only comes with having done it a lot in order to make it work. There's a certain magic to making it work that it takes a little while to acquire. So not only are you likely to have a disappointing experience, there's also a possibility that you'll have a dangerous experience with somebody who was never taught by anyone how to do this, but read about it on the internet and figured they'd give it a try, like fire play. You know, let's see if we can have some fun setting each other on fire. That seems like a really smart idea. And, you know, doing all kinds of suspension tricks and then dropping people on their heads and all the smart things that young people do because they think they're indestructible and they're not. So in some ways, I think the estrangement, and of course, there's some resentment from the other side, too. There's the old timers who say, well, you know, these people have no respect for our traditions. Please. I mean, I was there when those traditions were created, and I can understand why there is some measure of skepticism, let's put it that way, toward how they've been applied over the years, especially by some of the people who made them. So I understand why there would be a division, but I think it's unfortunate. I think both have things that they can learn from one another. I think there are some actually interesting, fresh ideas that have been brought into the world of BDSM and kink in general by a younger group. And I think that some people who are pretty set in their ways could learn a thing or two about flexibility. Some of them have some very, very, very retrogressive ideas about gender. Oh, my God. I read things sometimes. I just go, no, they didn't really put that on the screen for where people could see it. I cannot believe that. So perhaps they could learn some things about that from a younger group of people who have more enlightened ideas about it. I think it's good for people to be among their peers and to be comfortable when they want to be, but I think there is a need for a larger sense of community among all people who share what they identify as a kink orientation in order to be able to exchange learning based on their experience. And I think we're losing that. I think that the internet has overall been a bad thing for kink. It's brought a whole lot of people into it who, you know, with no direct personal contact with anyone else. So the first person they meet for real up close becomes the standard by which all of their future experiences as kinky people will be judged. And that could be either a very, very lucky thing or a very, very unlucky thing, depending on who the first person you actually meet in the flesh turns out to be.
But you have to admit the internet has open the door for people to connect in real life.
Sure.
In a way that it's like you sort of had to know someone who knew someone who knew someone.
It was better then. Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, now you can actually like Google your town and you can see if there's a social event or a club or a conference. So you can find, I mean, I think if you use the internet wisely, not to develop sort of virtual relationships that may not go anywhere, but to actually then go meet people in real life. And I also think people are better able to access other people who are into what they're into in a way that, you know, there are a lot of people sitting around being like, I'm the only one into panties. And now on the internet, you could see, oh, you're not. There's a million sites about panties.
Right. Some kinks are very specialized. And before the internet, I think people who had those very specialized kinks really were in a lonely situation. They were really suffering in that way. Now they're suffering in another way. They find out that just because they share that with someone doesn't mean they share anything else at all in common with that person or get along with them or should have anything to do with them. And also, frankly, I really do feel that the internet has become, that particularly the kink corner of the internet, has become a breeding ground, a sort of a game preserve for predators. I think we have a problem in the SM community that we never had back in the days when people had to meet face to face, of people who represent themselves to be one thing and then in real life turn out to be something else. And if you get into a situation with somebody who in one way or another disregards your consent and disregards your safety and abuses and mistreats you and does bad things to you, the fact that you consented to meet them in the first place under these conditions and with these intentions is going to make it very difficult for you to make a convincing case in court against them, which is not, I'm not one of these people who says, no, you shouldn't even bother going to the police. No, if somebody violates you, you should go to the police. But don't expect not to have to do some explaining as to how you came to be tied naked to this person's bed in the first place.
You're always giving me these provocative statements right before a commercial break. Okay, we are going to take a break. We're going to hear from some of our fabulous sponsors. One of my great sponsors is WeVibe, the world's best-selling couples vibrator. Go to we-vibe.com to find out more. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to hear more from the provocative, controversial, always has something to say, Ernest Green. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Mm-hmm.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans, just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We're talking today with adult film director, fetish connoisseur, BDSM veteran, Ernest Green. He's laughing because we're friends and he can. You said something pretty intense before the break, which I can't sort of just let float out there.
Yeah.
And I certainly have been reading about this on places like FetLife.com about consent, people who violate consent, abuse within the BDSM community.
Yep.
And you seem to have some strong feelings about
it. I certainly do. I think there's plenty of it. I think there's plenty of abuse in the SM community. I think there's a fair amount of sociopathic manipulation that goes on there. I think particularly in the group of people who subscribe to the most extreme interpretations of dominant and submissive relationships, there are, you know, the idea here is that we're not supposed to judge one another. That's the deal. That's become the, your kink is not my kink, but it's cool with me. Well, that's not always true. I don't find it. If your kink is getting inexperienced people and doing bad things to them, no, that's not okay. But there is no such thing anymore as a material community of people who can stand up and say, you know, this guy has hurt and violated every single partner he's ever been with, and we don't want him around. And anytime he's around, we're going to tell any new person who comes here to avoid that individual. On the biggest social networking site in the kink world, you're not even allowed to use the screen name of someone you met on that site who did something illegal to you. You know,
which is crazy. I mean, one of the things that this calls to mind is that there are some websites on which sex workers who've experienced, whether it's someone who's cheated them or violated them or even assaulted them, they can go on a website and network with each other and say, listen, I've dealt with this person. This is who he or she says they are, or these are the names they use. And this is a not safe client. So just beware.
Well, and Facebook and Twitter don't have any policies against saying things of that kind.
Right. And again, they're not using legal names.
Right.
But I know there's been great controversy on FetLife about not even being able to essentially hold people accountable, is what I'm hearing you say. That there used to be a point at which the community was small enough that it could police itself.
Yes.
And now it has gotten large, virtual, international, and there is no kind of reflex there.
Well, and it's developed a reactionary political tilt that I would never have anticipated. It's, you know, back in the days when Timothy Leary and his fellow professors were carefully experimenting with psychedelic drugs under carefully controlled conditions, I don't think they ever pictured a time when eighth graders would be taking acid on their way to junior high. That is sort of the situation that people who were pioneering in SM, you know, 20, 30 years ago find themselves in now, where people are coming to this thing with no experience and no idea of what might be good for them or what not might not be good for them. And there are those who benefit from that and don't want anybody telling them otherwise. What's really disturbed me about the whole controversy about this is the great hue and cry about witch hunts and blacklists and the ruination of innocent men's decent reputations by false accusations, as if these kinds of false accusations were all that common. There seems to be a very widespread view that false accusations would be a real problem for a lot of people. You know, if somebody, on one of the threads I was reading, somebody said that he had been a victim of false accusations six times. People, completely different people in unrelated circumstances, had falsely accused him of doing bad things to them. You don't suppose he has anything to worry about, do you? So I think some of this, it really has to do with getting people who've had bad experiences to shut up about it. And I don't think that is the way that this community can move forward. The way this community can move forward is for people who've had bad experiences and good experiences to talk about their experiences and share them with others and discuss what is and is not acceptable within the realm of consent. Because without consent, this behavior has no legal, moral, or ethical grounds to be allowed. If we want to be visible, if we want to be out and proud, then we need to be able to police ourselves and behave ourselves in a fashion that will enable some acceptance of who we are and what we're about in society without having to accept a lot of behavior that, frankly, is not acceptable by anyone who has any principles.
But is that part of it? Is it part of it that we want so much to separate ourselves from abuse? We keep saying, we're not, this is not about violence. This is not about pain. This is about consensual adults. And so we're trying to sort of shove the bad guys like out of the way so that no one sees that there are these unsavory characters.
No, I think the lunatics have taken over the asylum. I think the bad guys are now the ones who are most vocal and most visible. I think people with toxic ideas about DSX are the people who are doing most of the talking. And I think that's a very unfortunate development. It's sort of like the way in which talk radio became a right-wing medium. You know, it's the way in which some people, just by virtue of their ability to abuse everyone else verbally into just backing down from them, have managed to get the floor. And I think that's very unfortunate. What they're saying is, well, anything I can get anyone to not say no to is okay. And you have no right to tell me that it isn't. And anybody who had an experience with me that they didn't like has no right to tell anyone else about it either. Well, I think that that is very dangerous, stupid, bad thinking that will lead to exactly the kind of repression that everybody's so fearful will happen if people do start talking openly about abuse in the SM community. What's going to get us in trouble is not talking about abuse in the SM BDSM community. It's covering up abuse in the BDSM community. That will get us in trouble for sure.
And sweeping it under the rug, not addressing it. I cannot tell you how many times this has happened when I've been involved with events and a situation has arose, and how many people are willing to stand up and say, oh, wait now, Tristan, there's two sides to this story. I mean, it's like, right, because people just love to, you know, have their lives scrutinized. People love to tell you about these horrible experiences they've been through just to falsely accuse someone they had a quote unquote bad scene with.
Or they felt bad about it later, so they decided they were going to ruin this guy. Or their vengeful exes.
Oh, of course.
And the vengeful ex, the psycho ex who is stalking every decent master out there with the intent of making sure he never gets laid again. You know, really, I read these things and I just think, what parallel universe have I fallen into here? It bears no resemblance to anything that we used to have, where the idea was we would, if we found people behaving in a predatory manner in our community, push them out instead of pushing out the people who would try and warn everybody about them. But the way I see it going, it's the whistleblowers who are taking all the heat in this thing. They're the ones who are being told to sit down and shut up. And you know what? As I watch what is unfolding on that very site, it's working. They're giving up. But the attempt to open that site to discussion of abuse and illegal activities and violations of consent has basically failed. for a long time there, there was a lot of back and forth and back and forth. And basically the louder, more the bullies basically won. Bullies do have a way of winning in situations where they are not accountable in any way.
Okay, well, we have to end on a better note than that.
I
what
hope
a depressing
so.
Thought.
That depresses the hell out of me, I have
so,
to say.
So tell me your favorite scene in your new film, The Truth About O.
Okay, well, I'd say, generally speaking, it's the terrific three-way at the end with Asa Akira and Bobby Starr and James Dean in the iconic roles of O and her friend and her master. And I think it's just, let me put it this way. When I see it, the title up on torrent sites, it always says includes scene 5. So what can I tell you? If that's the one they're stealing, that's probably the one you want to see.
Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you, Ernest Green.
Thank you.
You can see Hustlers Taboo magazine, which Ernest Green is the editor of, at hustlerstaboo.com. You can read Ernest's commentary on the adult industry on the blog for pro-porn activism at bppa.blogspot.com. And you can sometimes track him down on Nina.com, Nina Hartley's official website. And while you're there, you can, of course, check out the fabulous Nina Hartley.
Please.
All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. Tune in next week for another edition of Sex Out Loud. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.